That's a really good question. It's how do we walk the talk? How do we work together? And there's some technical terms like co-design, research co-design around this. And there is a lot of attempts to spread the word to the clinicians, but it's still not getting out there. And we talked last week about Cancer Voices Walking Group. Well, I'd like to tell you about another walking group that we have started.
Please do.
Another novel strategy, a sneaky novel strategy for engagement.
Actually, may I say a highly clever strategy. Knowing something about this, but do go on.
And Christina is one of the people that walks with us. And we've started a walking group for consumers, survivors, friends, family, and researchers, cancer researchers. We walk every Friday lunchtime from along the River Torrens, and we walk and we talk and we share information, we share knowledge, we get the chance to pump researchers for information. We can ask them the questions that we've been wanting to understand or know about our cancer. It's amazing. We are introducing researchers that we know, that we have worked with, to each other, and they're finding that they've got mutual interests, or they're hearing from us things which spark ideas. Yeah, we start our walk at SAMRI, in the foyer of SAMRI at lunchtime on a Friday. And we have people from, that's the medical precinct in Adelaide now. So there's the University of Adelaide and the University of South Australia medical research centres that are just adjacent to SAMRI. So we get some of the researchers come from those institutions. And then we walk down towards the zoo and the botanic gardens, end of town, and we have another pick-up point at the university footbridge. And so a few more people join us there, depending on their time frames. We walk for about an hour, and we have survivors as well that are walking with us and join in from those other places too, if that's where it's convenient. And we're just walking and talking the whole time. And it doesn't have to be about research. It can be about anything. But it's drawing on our shared experience, and it's about building relationships. And you can't work together effectively if you haven't got that glue, that social glue for a starting point. It's informal, it seems to work. We were just trying it because we knew that walking and talking with survivors in the Belair National Park was such a good strategy, and Christina has actually joined us there. And that was starting the idea that it was such a useful way for engaging. We have a PhD student that I'm her consumer co-supervisor. I mean, that's another novel strategy, to have a consumer as a co-supervisor for a PhD student. But she is amazing, and she comes and she walks with us in Belair just about every week, and she walks with us on a Friday as well. It's her opportunity to get in touch with the people that her work is informed by and is about. It's nothing about us without us. If we don't know the size of this problem, if you don't know what matters to people, if you don't measure it, you can't address it, you can't change things, you can't provide services or help people to live better if you don't know about that at the population level.
Are people watching this model and thinking, This is a good way to be doing this health services research? Is this starting to make waves?
I think it's starting to make waves, but it's still going to take a long time. And there's often the thought that, my work is with rats and mice. I'm doing the kind of basic benchtop science, when I say basic, I mean that's what they call it. Not that it's.
Oh, no, it's not, anything
it's
but.
Not.
No, but that is the label that it is
yes,
given.
That's the label it's given. And, but that's not true either, because I work very closely with another researcher that's at SAMRI, and she works at the benchtop level, but she's. Comes out and walks with us and talks with us, and she's listened to us, and it has changed the way she has done her research about, it's changed the focus of her research. She thought that, she realised that what she was doing was not going to dramatically change outcomes, and she met a friend of ours who is no longer with us, but she knew that what she was doing previously was not going to change Tony's life. It was not going to give him his life back. And she put a human face to the work that she was doing, and it added an urgency. The experience that he had of some of the common cancer treatments, where she thought that people wouldn't actually be living all that well anyway, and so she was only marginally improving their outcomes. But then she saw from him what was that it can make a big difference, and you know, you just don't know where it will go, what will be the right result of even just little things that you might say. But together they can culminate and put together with lots of other little ideas a really big, important idea and outcome can come from that. It can change lives. Now, I do want to... Can I ask you a question, Christina?
Of course.
Because it was something like this. It was a workshop, developing a workshop that was the way that we first met.
That's right, down at Flinders Uni.
And it's not just the researchers as a group. It's when you're trying to get those outcomes. We were talking about, you know, the outcomes from exercise, not being, that word, translated into practice, not being heard by the clinicians, by the people that are affected by it, but it's also the policy people we need to get involved. And so, but you had a nice a model for all of the players that needed to be involved if we were really to make real change. I can't
very
quite
good
remember
of you to remember the model,
the whole
because
thing.
Charles Boland, 2001, what his model was so good. He did it for World Health Organization. And it was called the Partnership Pentagon, that's right. And it's very simple. It's that if you're going to make real change in health services outcomes, you need to engage not just the consumers, not just the researchers, but also the healthcare managers, the practitioners, and policy. And not necessarily all at the same time, but everyone needs to have an informed seat at that table. And we tend to educate people and train them, I think, in silos, so that policy people are trained to talk to policy people and researchers are trained to talk to researchers, and so it goes on. The more we can find ways to cross-weave across that through perhaps ideally their training, but even when they're out in the field, that's when we start to make difference. And that's why I'm so interested in the work that you're doing with Cancer Voices, because it is such a strong interweaving of being open to and listening to bring in those very different voices. So I don't think we've actually talked about Cancer Voices per se, have we?
No, not
perhaps we should. Give us a snapshot of Cancer Voices.
Cancer Voices are people affected by cancer who are trying to use that experience to try and improve the path for those that might follow. And we do that in a whole variety of ways, but we realise that it's at the system level we need to make changes. So some of our main actions are system advocacy, involvement, awareness, and sharing information. And we have a couple of mottos. One of the mottos is good systems, not just good luck. Because we need to change the system and not rely on just good luck and chance that people will get the best treatment and care available. And we need to make sure that irrespective of whether you're articulate or whether you understand the health system, that you will get
or your postcode.
Good care. Or your postcode, exactly. Our focus is also on wellness, not just on illness. And as I said last time, you don't value your health until you lose it, and you don't. When as soon as you are diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, all you want to do is get well, and know how you can get well, how you can be as well as you can be during this whole thing, and so that reminding clinicians and researchers and policy people about the importance of wellness. And we have very little government attention to prevention. And I you know, you understand that there's a 3-year cycle for governments, and prevention has a very long time frame. So Cancer Voices was established in 2007. Amazing guy called Ashley Moore, who established it. And unfortunately, Ashley's no longer with us. But it was his vision and his personality and drive that got Cancer Voices established, that we felt that we just needed to have a bit of fun. And the Tour Down Under was coming to Adelaide. So Ashley suggested, well, why don't we have a team in this, have a Cancer Voices cycling team in the Tour Down Under Community Challenge Ride. We only need 5 people for the team. And typical Ashley, he got his teeth into it, and we ended up with 123 people in the cycling team.
It's a lot more than 5.
And we've been riding as a group ever since, every Sunday morning out there, riding up into the hills. We learned from that advocacy is just so hard unless you have a bit of fun. I don't think as an organisation we could have kept going if it hadn't been for the cycling group and now the walking group.
Opportunities to bring consumers and research together has great advantages. It's a different way of making the whole process stronger.
That's right. It's not overlaying something extra over the top. It's completely changing the model, changing the way it happens. Because what's the point of doing the research if we're not going to use the research and we're not going to let the people who are going to be affected by this or who will want to know about it?